Hello, everybody. Mariner here, and welcome to Net That Hall and the Game Week 2 matchup review show. As always, with my old mate, Gabe, FPL Lens, and Lucien, teacher underscore FPL on Twitter. How are you doing, boys?
What
Who's
happened?
muted?
No, it's okay. I was just about to ask what happened to this game week. Everything just flew by, didn't it? And suddenly I'm
flew
just
by
left
or flew yeah. by or flew off flew by flew
yeah.
off
both.
Flew,
both.
Flew somewhere.
I tell you what, I had Serge Aurier for the first game, and he made my rank jump from 4.5 million to 1.5 million, and Estupinian basically made my rank go back to 4.5 million. So swings and roundabouts, I cannot manage my heart. I will not look at rank after this game week.
Well, Gabe's not looking at rank. It sounds really wise, Gabe. I am looking at rank, and I wish I didn't.
Honestly, I've barely even looked at my score after each game week. I'll look at it a couple days later because somebody DMs me, hey, how'd you do? And then I'll look. I didn't know my score before last week's show. I looked last night at my score, and I don't plan on looking at my rank at least until game week 10. But if I'm feeling the way I'm feeling now in game week 10, I might not look at it at all.
That's a good idea. It's a really good idea. Anyway, let's get on with it, shall we? Because the rant is going to come, but as Nima says, the rant cannot happen in the first few minutes because otherwise we'll get pinged by the bot. So
we'll do the rant.
I think there's a few people waiting for this rant, and I promise you it is coming. It may not be on tomorrow because I might not be on tomorrow, depending on what happens. So I may have to get this rant out the way here. But first of all, guys, we are again up for the Football Content Awards 2023. As you can see on the screen, and if you're listening in, please do take a few seconds to vote for us for Best in Fantasy Football Video category and help us reach our third finals in that very short time that Net.Hall have been running. You can find it at footballcontentawards.com /voting. And you can also tweet by saying, I am voting in the @FCA_FCAs for @NetThatHall in Best in Fantasy Football Video. It's also in the bottom. You'll see it thousands of times during this. We're not asking for likes during this video. We're asking for nominations. Right, gentlemen, shall I start the ball running? Let's have a look at the Game Week 2 review. I will very quickly do this. And who is sat there at the top of the pile but Brian Mposto? Mbuno with 16 points, Gabe. Solid match. Again, solid match. 15 points there. Leon Bailey. Mitoma scores a worldie. Diego Jota. Well done, Gabe. You called him out before. You also suggested that Saka doesn't take penalties anymore, much to my disgust. We'll come on to that later on. And there's Odegaard with 11. Vissa, Estupinian, the Lucien rank wrecker. Vicario is there as well. Luke Dean, 10 points. My God, back to old times, eh? John McGinn, Neto That Hall, Serge Aurier, and Saar is sat there. And there's also someone down the bottom. I cannot see it on the screen. I can't read it. Gabe, just in 30 seconds, did you see much of the week? I think you're in Los Angeles dodging tropical storms. But did you see much of the football?
I didn't see it live, but I did get caught up yesterday and last night.
Right, okay. So we'll come on to it. So I hope you did see it, bearing in mind we're reviewing it. Lucien, I imagine you watched everything, as usual.
Wow. Goodness, somehow, some way, I've managed to mark 200 exam papers and watch everything. So, yeah.
That's not bad.
Everything will be written out pretty soon.
That's not bad. And I managed to have a stent in the heart and still watch 5 games of football.
So much life going on.
Yeah, that's great. Let's go. Nottingham Forest against Sheffield United, boys. So what did NetXG say? It said 1.88 for Forest and it said 1.04 for Sheffield United. What was the score, Gabe? It was 2-1. You're bang on. Fixture difficulty 2 for Forest and minus 0.8 for Sheffield United. It again went pretty similar. It liked Nottingham Forest's central matchup, and that very quickly paid off. The XG as well, everything was green for Forest, really. Sheffield United expected it to be a struggle. It was, apart from a worldie. Lucien.
Well, I mean, that's how it is, right? okay, so I'm going to start with the slides. And it says that Brennan Johnson to be at the center of everything. That is based on what we watched last season when, you know, Brennan Johnson was on the right side of a front three. The unfortunate thing here is that the same front three remain. Awoniyi, Brennan Johnson, and Morgan Gibbs-White. But this time, however, we have to take note of their opponents, because whenever Forest go up against a three-man defense, Morgan Gibbs-White is actually the star of the show. So that is definitely something we did not consider. So Morgan Gibbs-White was basically the one playing the ball out to Aurier, Brennan Johnson, if not taking shots himself by linking up with Awoniyi. He was really, literally at the center of everything. So in the first half, he took advantage of Sheffield United's inferior left wing back. And when he was subbed off and a new left wing back came on, Forrest basically turned it on. And so I do have to comment on Gabe's favorite Traore, although I do prefer our Traore better, because I think we have like four Traores in the league now. Benny, as I would call him, unfortunately is not the star of Sheffield United's show anymore. It is this new guy that one of our favorite accounts on Twitter, Philip Nova, highlighted just before the Forest Sheffield United game, Gustavo Hammer. His worldie was one of the few things that he did, but really he was just cream of the crop. He was just a cut above literally everyone else in that Sheffield United team. He helped progress the ball from the back. He actually made Sheffield United look like a Premier League team. And that is definitely something to look out for rather than Sheffield United's direct play. So that's all I have, really. Sheffield United can't be underestimated anymore.
Yeah, Gabe, Awoniyi, still scoring, still in great form. Bullet header. Anything you want to add to what Lucien says? I think you'd probably be quite smug with this one.
Well, I don't feel smug, because there were some things I got wrong. Like, it does make sense for Morgan Gibbs-White to be the center of the attack, and that's maybe, like, in hindsight, something that I should have seen, because versus a back three, the space is in front of that line. So that does make sense. I just thought that Forrest would go to the speed, the Brennan Johnson speed against those slow center backs. But so in hindsight, like I think there was definitely a lesson there. And Sheffield United's kind of like move from the dribbling of Traore to the finishing of Hammer is an interesting lesson as well. But I love that we nailed the central matchup, and I love that NetXG kind of nailed the score as well.
Yes, absolutely. I'm just saying just a few little comments just about how people have done this weekend, and also one of my comments about a knobhead referee. I wasn't very impressed with that. I think we're coming up to the Arsenal game soon anyway, but let's keep going. Fulham against Brentford then. Okay, we thought Brentford would do okay. They did, again. They also shut them out, which I don't think either of us maybe expected, Gabe. I think we thought Fulham might get something. Certainly NetXG thought Fulham would get something at 1.53. Brentford was at 2.45, though. My fixture difficulty was a bit positive for both attacks over defence. Really liked Fulham's shots on target, actually, and Fulham's headers, but that didn't pay off at all. Shot goal predictors and shot on target predictors were really quiet. Lucien, I've brought Mbeumo into my team. Have I made a mistake?
Yes, because I have just brought Lisa into my team.
Excellent! That's a good start.
Well, I think we have to give kudos to Gabriel for predicting that Brentford would roll out the 4-3-3 against Fulham here. And so Shada did indeed play on the left side. Henry was awfully quiet, ironically, until he played on the right side in injury time of the second half. He actually set up Christopher Ayer for that assist at the very end. So the thing about Fulham's right side that was supposed to be weaker is that, you know, I think we have to understand that this Fulham side is about life after Mitrovic, right? What are we going to do when Raul Jimenez plays the number 9 and eventually when Adama Traore comes in? And the unfortunate thing here is that, yeah, they're not exactly weak down the right side anymore. In fact, they actually dominated possession against Brentford. No surprise there. And a lot of the time, Fulham basically worked down that right side. They built upon their encouraging display against Everton last week by having Harrison Reed, Harry Wilson, and Kenny Tete all basically making triangles around that right side. Whether it comes to fruition, we don't know. But at least we know for sure that Wissa and Mbeumo cannot do anything wrong. Absolutely cannot do anything wrong. It's not about Shada. It's not about even attacking Fulham's weaknesses. It's just that the two of them are just on fire. I mean, Wissa is central. Let's make no mistake about that. So that part of the slide, absolutely. Wissa is the number nine. It's just a matter of how many minutes he gets. And as for Mbeumo, well, he had one good shot early in the game, but he literally did nothing else until the penalty in the second half. So leave that to what you, how you interpret things, because I did have a friend that asked me, how often will Mbeumo get penalties? I cannot answer that question, and I pray that Mbeumo does comes good for you, because I've actually gone for Mitoma shopping for my 6.5 million midfielder, finally gave in to the humility.
I might be shopping for a few yet, because I might in my wildcard. He scored two. I didn't see this game, but he scored two. So how could he only done one thing right?
Pen and then a goal in stoppage time at the end.
It's goals of goal, mate. Mate, I would have took a goal off my left arse cheek last night after the way things went. Honestly, it was pretty dreadful for me. I tell you what, I'd take every bit of luck I could get, quite frankly, right now. Okay, Gabe, from your perspective, I don't think you've got any Brentford assets, have you? Do you have Mbeumo? I don't think you do, do you?
No. Mm-mm.
None at all. Do you feel like you need anyone? They're in great form right now.
I think you need at least one. I think either Mbeumo or Wissa are great options. I think they're both good options. And I wrote in the Mbeumobile post that Mbeumo, that he's not the first option. He's not the first option for the team in attack, but he gets the most options. Like that he's a release valve. He takes corners, so he has different ways to point. Whereas Wissa is just at the tip of the spear there, and so I think that makes him the better option as well. Pens might, but also like team, it's also team dependent, right? If you have the luxury of bringing in a forward, if you don't have any issues in midfield, it's gonna depend. But I think either one would be just fine.
Okie dokie. Right, let's keep going then. So the next one. Liverpool against Bournemouth. As I say, as the immortal bard says, there are death, there are taxes, and there's Liverpool conceding goals. And nothing changed here. We expected them to concede. They did. We expected them to win. They did. Perhaps we thought Bournemouth might get a little bit more, actually. Certainly the NetXG did at 2.07. Liverpool was 2.04. My fixture difficulty liked Liverpool a lot more. It also liked the defence a lot more, but not that much. Yes, Salah captain here, again, missed penalty. I mean, you know, 3 points for a goal, great missed penalty. Never looked like scoring. I thought he was going to miss, and he did. He did turn the rebound in. Lucien, help me. This is where it all started to go wrong.
I think the first thing I want to jump in this slide really quickly and speak first, because I got to tip my hat to Lucien for calling out Dominic Szoboszlai, and I mentioned him after game week one only because Lucien kind of like spotted him, and sure enough he comes in with an assist. So feeling a little smug about this slide, I guess, but it's thanks to Lucien.
Anyway, well, let's keep his head in the picture. So come on, Lucien, yeah. Tell us all about it.
Okay, so I think we have to face facts here, and for FPL purposes, we have to start with the obvious. And you know, you can be as creative as you like on the right side, because Trent, Szoboszlai, and Salah are recreating the triangle on that right side that we love so much. The unfortunate thing is that neither of those three are taking shots. based on that triangle. They all still feed it to Luis Diaz on the left side. So Luis Diaz is still the one occupying both center backs here. But I want to start with what the slide said, because for the longest time, I have been looking for instances where Liverpool actually counter-pressed Bournemouth down. I had to scroll and scroll and scroll all the way to the 12th minute just for Bournemouth to get possession. Oh my gosh. So, in fact, it was Bournemouth's counter-press that was the star of the show that got them the lead. I mean, the irony, right? So, with Liverpool, unfortunately, I think the counter-press will only work against better sides, whereas against inferior sides, we are actually looking at that right-sided triangle to come up with something good. So, yeah, the unfortunate thing here is that Diogo Jota barely counter-pressed. It was actually Gakpo who did a better job against inferior opposition. But so with Jota, he actually plays between the lines rather than as the number nine, which might be a good thing because it means that Jota is actually more involved in Liverpool's chances. But really, it's all about that triangle, right? Salah, TAA, and Szoboszlai. Who works himself into the box? The answer is still Szoboszlai. Trent stops short of the penalty area. Salah pulls really far out wide. He barely took any shots from the wing. And I do feel that if you don't have any fires to put out, Salah is definitely a sell if you can find a midfielder that you like. Yeah, start clearing that money and start upgrading the rest of your midfield attack or whatever it is.
Hey. Oh. He's already gone. He's already gone, mate. He's already toast. He was toasted last night. So when I realised that I needed to do something.
Just one last point, because there was one last line on Dominic Solanke. So Bournemouth counter-press favours Solanke. It's not the direct balls to him, but the counter-press itself. Because their central midfield, Christie and Philip Billing, they take turns pressing Trent off the ball. Well, you know, so whenever they press Trent off the ball, it's Solanke that gets the ball between the lines, and he either creates chaos or he takes a shot himself and Semenyo picks up. That's about it.
Yeah, I think the Trent Alexander-Arnold experiment is an epic fail, Gabe.
You mean for FPL purposes?
Yes.
It was doomed from the beginning, Mariner. We said, I think you asked me when will Liverpool get their first clean sheet, and my response was against Wolves in game week 5. I might revisit that. I don't think that they get that clean sheet anymore away at the Molyneux. So further down the road.
Yep. They might score there definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I think Lucien covered it really well in good detail. We see in the heat maps there why Salah's a sell. Solanke has potential, but again, not that many shots, and Trent is a mistake.
Yeah, and I bought Isak. Anyway, Wolves against Brighton, everybody. Here we go again. Oh, hello, Ducky. Here's the wild carder. He's staring at his wild card. So, what have we got? Wolves against Brighton. Well, we didn't get this one right, Gabe. We didn't get this one right at all. MetXG suggested very low, 1.27, 1.19. Fixture difficulty said the same. Brighton a different gravy right now, away from home as well as at home. Solly March tearing down the middle on two breaks, scoring from inside the six-yard box twice. Or very close to the six-yard box. Mitoma scoring an utter worldie. But Brighton conceding. I think that might be a thing of the future. Lucien.
Well, I mean, it was entertaining, I guess.
I agree.
At nil-nil. Oh my gosh, where do I begin? I can't even rant because Brighton was so good. I'm lost because honestly, both teams played to their best ability, and it's just about who finishes their chances, right? I mean, Mitoma beating Semedo 1v1, okay, fine, that happens. And then you get Fabio Silva, who has a 1v1 against the goalkeeper, and he misses. It's as simple as that. I think sometimes we have to, I mean, at least with, you know, two teams that want to dominate the ball, like Wolves, like Brighton. And I think we will see a few more teams try to dominate the ball no matter how aggressive their opponents play, right? Spurs, maybe Man United. I mean, so long as you expect rock and roll football, you just buy their best assets and hope for the best, really. Because at this stage, I can go into tactics, I can go into strategies, I can go into zonals, and they all don't matter. Because in a one-off game such as this, it's just about taking advantage of those moments where you come up with something brilliant, and that's it. I think the only key takeaway we can take from this is that Wolves, when they are down, they go hard, and they go harder, and they get punished harder. So I think there's a slight chink in Brighton's armor down that right side where they feel James Milner, I think, right now at right back. Because Fabio Silva's big chance was from the left side. Ryan Inouye's big chance was also from the left side later on.
It was. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it will happen. And I do feel that that is the only weak spot that Brighton concede from. I mean, I think Huang's goal was also from the left side too. So, yeah, it's just a matter of time before people pick up on that.
Question here from Thingamabob, one of the haulers. Are we reading too much into the João Pedro benching? I'm not. I've sold him. Gabe?
What are people reading into it? I don't know what people are reading.
I don't know. Well, I've just sold him because he's a minutes risk. So I've sold him for risk.
So for me, like based on De Zerbi's comments, he says that João Pedro has a lot to learn kind of on the off the ball and on the defensive and pressing and filling gaps. So my guess is that João Pedro will probably play in easier home fixtures, which
might be great.
Which for me makes him a solid hold. But I don't know that. This is a total guess. So I mean, with the uncertainty, if you need that spot to get to like Jackson or you want to get to Alvarez or something like that, or Isak in your case there, Mariner, I don't mind that move, but. If you're selling Pedro, I think it comes with the risk that it'll come back to bite you, because in the pictures that you want him, that's when he'll play.
Yeah. I mean, no doubt. I mean, look, you can't have them all, though, can you? But no, I was very impressed with Brighton, I have to say, and they are certainly, again, tearing trees up. They're looking spectacular. I think that's the word I would use. Not looking so spectacular at Manchester United. Everybody. And that's the game we're on now, Tottenham against Manchester United. YourNetXG thought Manchester United might have a tough day at the office, Gabe. They really shouldn't have. They couldn't hit a barn door from a yard, quite frankly. Spurs, it liked them a little bit more on the NetXG. But yeah, 1.18, 1.36 there. Fixed difficulty thought Spurs had a better outlook of it than Manchester United. Maybe wrong. You know, in hindsight, look, Manchester United, Bruno could have had two assists and a goal, and probably should. Rashford missed it. Well, I think he might have been offside, but missed a golden chance and really doesn't look in form at all. I'm not very impressed with them. I hate the defence as well. I really, really hate it. I've got Luke Shaw. It's awful, quite frankly. Yes, he could have had an assist, but also I think he hit the post with a no, nearly scored no goal as well. Not an awful lot for me to be able to say in much hope, apart from, who's next? Forest at home. If I own one Manchester United player, even if I wildcard, he's going nowhere. Lucien.
Well, Man United. Hey. Okay, so I'm going to comment on the slide a little bit because there are hardly any predictions on that slide. I think this is like an after effect of Gabe's epic rant from game week one. So, I mean, I'm just going to go with what Spurs and Man United both did well. We all expected Madison to do well against Man United. None of that happened. I think we didn't even really see set pieces come into play here because... The whole setup that Big Angie's putting together, right? He tweaked it a little bit. So in Celtic, he had the wingers hold the ball and then the fullbacks would run forward. You know, unfortunately, the wingers are so impatient that they will not hold the ball. So instead, they had, this time around, the deep center backs, Ben Davis, would be the one holding the ball and then the fullbacks would just run ahead of them. And so the likes of Son and Kulusevski would actually run in from the wings to support. It looks really weird because they none of them offer any penetration unless somehow Ben Davis pulls off this epic chip over the top. So I don't know whether it will work long term, because so far all we see are the backup players shining. And in the end, it's still their secondary creator, Kulusevski, that does the damage in his usual awkward left-footed from the right wing nonsense. So yeah, for Spurs, it's getting there. They're tweaking the approach. And they are arguably about to hit third gear. At least it's better than Man United. For Man United, everything is going down the left side. Everything. I think in a parallel universe, United would have finished their chances and Bruno would have had 3 bonus points for his Rabona assist. But Luke Shaw's worth keeping. Definitely worth keeping. Bruno Fernandes, I'm not so sure. Because judging by that Sheffield United game, doesn't look like Forest have any significant weaknesses thus far. I mean, even Arsenal, you'd argue last week, didn't really expose them too much. So, I mean, I like the fixture, but I've sold Rashford for a Brighton player. So I'm happy with that. But for Man United, they've not solved any of the issues that Gabe's mentioned here. Mason Mount is still Mason Mount. Casemiro is still Casemiro. The only thing's improved is that Garnacho's got a 5 out of 10 instead of a 3 out of 10 last week. Really.
I mean, Rashford, we said pre-season, Bruno 8.5, Rashford 9. Value-wise, it was Bruno just over Rashford. I think that's where I am now. I think, as I say, if I wildcarded, I may actually switch to Bruno from Rashford right now. Also, Rashford's playing the 9. You don't like that, right?
Don't like Rashford at the 9. He's just not good at it. And you can tell he's not comfortable there. James from Planet FPL suggested that he wonders if Rashford is actually carrying an injury just because of how awkward he looks out there. So I'll be curious to see that. I'm going to disagree with Lucien here. I don't think United defense is a good investment. And I do think Bruno can still be a good investment. He looked good in the game, and if he had better players around him, he would have come away with a couple of returns. But he's right that the midfield isn't figured out. I mean, Mount and Casemiro are too far apart, so they're getting sliced and they're not connecting. But as far as there was a question in the chat, are Rashford and Bruno sells? Yeah, I agree. Rashford is a sell, especially if he is playing the 9. And even if he's not, if he goes back out to the wing, how much production will Hoyland take from him? So I think Rashford is a sell. I think Bruno could be a sell, but my guess is there are probably other fires you've got.
Well, I certainly have. But if I owned him, I wouldn't be going anywhere. And I think, right, to be honest with you, I if Bruno drops in price, you could nearly turn around and say, well, if he'd have just had a bit of luck, he could have been price rising right now, not the other way.
I might rather
sell Saka. Actually, yeah, I might be with you on that one. I might be with you on that, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm not at all against that. That was another. We're going to come on to that in a minute. I'm saving the best till last. Like the game week. Manchester City against Newcastle, guys. Okay, very tight as it happened. NetXG thought Manchester City were 1.97, so probably thought a little bit different there. And it did fancy Newcastle for a goal. I think my net fixture difficulty also saw something a bit similar. Perhaps Newcastle a little bit tighter defensively away from home than they were last season, perhaps. One thing I will say, Haaland left his shooting boots at home, didn't he? Could have had a couple, scuffed a couple. Alvarez looks, what a goal. Great goal. Foden as well, lively. The numbers thought that Manchester City would win. Probably a shot goal predictors thought a bit more, Gabe. But Lucien, Newcastle didn't really create much. What was your view?
Well, that's the thing about City, isn't it? They somehow come up with something completely different just to catch the elite teams off guard. And this time round, you would never guess, right, who would invert into midfield without John Stones. It was Manuel Akanji, who somehow drifted into midfield. A right centre-back playing left midfield. My gosh, that is really awkward. But he pulled it off, and he even admitted it in an interview post-match that they've just tried it a couple of times in training, and it works. So anyway, what happened is that movement created an opening for Kovacic and Rodri on the right side to set up Foden in that right half space. So the ball basically goes center to right up front. Simple as that. I think I don't have to hype Phil Foden up anymore. He is a gem because he's basically replicating what KDB does, but with acceleration. I think the biggest problem, the biggest weakness of KDB's is that he always lacks acceleration. Whereas with Foden, like, wow, you know, the moment he picks up the ball, he does that five-a-side futsal thing. He rolls the ball and then he accelerates into space. Yeah, I just love watching that because in the first half, he made all the difference. He either drifted to the right side or he went to the left and he overloaded whatever spaces he needed to. I think most important here is the consistency between both Man City in game week one and game week two, where they just lump the ball to Haaland after they go 1-0 up. That is a thing. But instead of winning set pieces, Haaland was basically the pivot player so that Foden and Alvarez or Foden and Grealish would operate in the same zone, picking up the second ball after Haaland. And that is how they engineer their chances after going 1-0 up. I mean, I can't say much more because we do have to acknowledge that Erling Haaland's chances came after Newcastle made their attacking subs. So the other takeaway really is that Newcastle themselves aren't fixture-proof because after lauding them for destroying Aston Villa last week, every one of their assets came up short. Their left side basically went quiet and they actually found more joy down the right side where Miguel Almiron somehow got behind Jack Grealish to create a lot of chaos. But that's about it, really. That's where it ends.
Okay. Gabe, anything you want to add? I mean, I brought Isak in. I really like the look of him. Subbed early this week, but look, it's Manchester City. I don't really worry about that too much. He's playing a really weak defence next in Liverpool. Bring it on.
Yeah, just to like underscore Lucien's point on Phil Foden, and it's the reason. Well, as soon as I saw he was starting that in that first game, why I started the season with him. For me, it's not like Kevin De Bruyne. He has good acceleration if he's able to lengthen his stride, but what Foden has is that turn. He like that half turn that he does, and as he receives the ball, he's already in stride. Because he's got quicker legs, so he does that turn, and then he has the kind of like futsal moves to add to that. So and Leon said the DS and Guardiola pairing looked good, and it was interesting that that Pep trusted Guardiola against Newcastle, and Ake was on the bench. I think that says a lot, and maybe bumps Guardiola up to the best value defender if we're looking at value.
He's still sharing, though, isn't he? This is the problem. He's still sharing with Ake.
Well, no, we don't know that. It's too soon to know. But what I'm saying, my point here is that the fact that Pep trusted the new guy in the tougher matchup,
I appreciate that. Does that logic again turn round and say, look where Ake plays, probably in the games you want him to? You know what I mean? It's that same thing as we discussed earlier, really. For me, right. Diaz is the pick. To me, Diaz is the pick.
Well, I mean, Diaz is obviously the most nailed, but he's also more expensive. So I'm just saying value that 5 million.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I
was surprised at Newcastle that they didn't kind of switch it up. Yeah, a lot of the chances went to Almiron's side, and I think maybe that was for a reason. Maybe Pep designed it that way, knowing Almiron is the weak link in that attack. So I don't know. I was surprised that Howe didn't kind of switch it up and go with Barnes and Gordon there.
Fair enough. Next one, Aston Villa Everton. Now, I sympathise with Everton fans because I once went to Hartlepool as a Grimsby fan. And I was already three quarters of the way home by the end of the game. That's about 150 miles, Kate. I saw the Everton fans sneaking out very, very early, looking extremely peed off. And probably rightly so. They were garbage. The Aston Villa NetXG only 1.23, didn't realise which Everton were going to turn up. and it wasn't the one that Sean Dyche wanted. Aston Villa on the fixture ability actually really liked them, and that's because Everton are crap away from home anyway. They have been for ages. Nothing really changes there, but they were even worse than normal here. Leon Bailey, two returns. Douglas Lewis on penalties. No Watkins, probably, although he did get an assist. Duran, I thought that was a band, but it wasn't. But anyway, Duran got a goal. Well, there we got a goal, came off the bench. Yes, there we go. Goals spread around, probably players who we didn't expect. Only one for Watkins. Lucien.
I think it's about time we actually studied how Emery's 4-2-2-2 works. You know, that box is really a magic box, because sometimes it's a flat four and that screwed up against Newcastle. Sometimes it's a diamond here. And I think the commonality between this formation and the Newcastle games formation is that McGinn on that left half space is actually starting to forge a partnership with Lucas Digne and Ollie Watkins. For the first time in a very long while, Watkins is not alone on the left side. I think we've not seen link-up play on the left side since Jacob Ramsey in the Steven Gerrard era. Ooh, that was a long time ago. So, yeah, I think that's one of the biggest ingredients. And I think a bit of a comment on Diaby, because he offers something that the rest of the Villa team doesn't have. Just this cute ability to have this fox-in-a-box-like poacher kind of instinct where, you know, when the ball goes out to Lucas Digne, everyone's expecting a cross, right? Watkins wants it on his head. Bailey wants it at the far post. Everyone's like rushing in with speed. And Diaby just stops. He just stops and he waits. And it's so obvious that Diaby is the kind of striker that appears in the right place at the right time. I think it's kind of what helped Villa get into Europe when Ings was still there. You know, they're missing that sort of quality in the box. And Diaby basically offers that, because he's also able to link up play. He got between the Everton lines so often in the first half that, yeah, they had no choice but to deal with him. And that was another chaos creator. So, yeah, Diaby good. As for Everton, well, you mentioned Danjuma's carries in the slide. Everton barely got the ball. But, I mean... He's better than Maupay. He came on for DCL earlier than expected, which is a good thing.
Well, because there we go again. Another DCL injury. I mean, my God, I thought I was unlucky with just Reece with FPL and things like that. But poor DCL is so unlucky with injuries, isn't he? He's just complete one after the other. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. So, but no, Everton were awful. I think we can safely say that. Gabe, quick question about Watkins. 8 million, no penalties.
I think we've said it from preseason. Like, Diaby's going to siphon chances from him. We wondered whether he would still be on penalties as well. So no, he's definitely not. I don't think he's worth the value there. But I like what Lucien said about Diaby. He had three shots, two chances created. All his three shots were from decent range. I think he had like 0.3 XG or something like that, and they were all on target. So he just like hangs out and does good things. It's great.
Yes, absolutely. Let's face it, maybe Everton are quite targetable right now for clean sheets, because they were damn poor.
Anyway, I gotta say, right, I'm not buying, like, I don't think an attack based on John McGinn and Luca Digne is sustainable. I will say that. This is going to change.
Yeah. Anyway, they're not going to play Everton every week either. That's another point. True. They were bad. All right. West Ham against Chelsea. So, this was a bit of another one of those games for me. So, you know, Chelsea, the NetXG didn't really see an awful lot, 1.23. Actually saw it could be quite a tight game. Same with West Ham, 1.29. Fixed difficulty actually liked West Ham a bit more, actually, and it probably picked it. They probably picked this result a little bit better. And it liked the XG and the big chances, to be fair. What it did show, is an Antonio screamer. That's one thing. He had a great, it's an amazing goal. But before that, we had a goal for old Chucky. And, you know, the player I brought in, Chucky, 4.5 million, playing in midfield, playing in the 10th for Chelsea, gets his goal, and I'm thinking, happy days. I've got him now for game week three. He's 4.5 million. Then he goes and does his knee ligaments. Out for the season. Another injury. Another terrible blow for the player. A blow for me, but I'm not worried about it because it's only a game. I'm worried about these players, really. That was terrible, terrible news. Lucien, what I'm interested in here, particularly as somebody who is scouting a certain Raheem Sterling somewhat, I saw a little bit of the old Sterling, albeit without the finishing touch or the other player's finishing touch. What was your perspective of the game? And I'd like to ask you about Sterling as well, because he could be interesting for me.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of the old Sterling too. I mean, those T-Rex hands are unmissable, right? yeah.
Go ahead.
Chelsea cannot get into the second gear right now because, I mean, the best thing about game week one was how James worked so well with Sterling on the right side. And now you see Chilwell start to work with Chukwuemeka on the left side, and that's gone. So what's next? I mean, what's left, right? I mean, the question really is what's left, because Chelsea was so naive. They were so, so naive dealing with West Ham's set pieces. I mean, the slide here said, you know, Bowen, but really the line before that, biggest chances coming from set pieces. That is West Ham, bread and butter, water is wet. What else can you say, right? okay, now a quick word on Chelsea, because I do believe that the penalty at 1-1 would have changed everything. It really would have. But it severely dampened Chilwell's perspective. Prospect, sorry.
Not off.
Okay, so
Oh dear.
Yeah, I mean they're just trying to integrate too many players too soon. You know, Moises Caicedo, Lavia's probably going to come in. Everyone's asking the big question, right? How are they going to make the side revolve around Sterling, Enzo Fernandez, or Nicholas Jackson? Because I think there was this one passage of play where the ball started from the right side. It went to Nicholas Jackson and he went all the way to the left side, right? He took a shot or something like that. And it ended up with Chilwell and Chukwuemeka. And that's how Chucky got his goal. That really just puts pin on the head for Nicholas Jackson. But otherwise, it's just difficult to say, right? We just have to wait another week with Chelsea because you don't know where Sterling will play. You don't know who will take Chukwuemeka's place, right? It could be Mudryk. It could be literally anyone. It could be Madueke for all we know. It's just difficult to tell with Chelsea right now. That's the unfortunate thing. So just buy the number 9 and like cross your fingers, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I see Sterling at 7 million. He probably fits my structure a little bit better, especially owning Isak. And, you know, to be honest with you, what I like about Sterling is also the Enzo penalty miss. And remember who also has taken penalties before. So that's something else which makes me think, you know, is Sterling next in line to miss a penalty for Chelsea? Probably if I buy him, yes, is the answer. but yeah, you know, Chilwell getting subbed off early as well. Very strange. Gabe, did you? I don't know if you saw this game, but West Ham probably did a bit job on Chelsea towards the end, actually.
Yeah, they did, and I'm not buying the Sterling love that you guys had. Like this old Sterling, just because he's dribbling into the box, he still has no idea what to do with the ball when he gets in the box. So he'll go into the box and he'll turn around and he'll take a few steps, he'll take a few more steps, and I don't see him penetrating well. I don't see him shooting that well. For me, he's not an option at all. I think Sterling's a big trap. I think Nicholas Jackson is definitely interesting, but now you have to wonder. I think the side, you know, Lucien was asking, I think it has to revolve around Enzo. And he has to drive the side. And if they really commit to that, then Nicholas Jackson will really pop. And if they don't commit to that, then Nicholas Jackson will be inconsistent. So it's largely a wait and see to see how they adapt and kind of like how they improve.
I see a lot of people bringing Chelsea assets in And of course, now they've got fewer and fewer options to actually bring in. One of the big problems now is the fact that people are looking at probably doubling up on the defence. I'm not even sure about that, if I'm brutally honest. I've thought about it myself, but they don't fill me full of hope, you know, to double up on them. Do you share my view, Gabe?
You know, I don't think it's a terrible idea. You know, you have Milo Gusto at 4.5 million.
Yeah, he's only 4 million. That's right. He's only 4
million. Oh, 4 million,
yeah,
right. 4 million.
Yeah, he's only 4, yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's an obvious way in, right? And it's an easy double way in there.
It is. But I think the exciting way to do is to go Sterling and Jackson, personally, if you were going to go for it. That's what I would do. But I just find it a bit boring. But no, it's obvious. Obviously boring. It's my view.
No, but I don't know the double attack. But I don't think there's anything to suggest that a double attack warrants investment. I mean, maybe if you want to punt on one, but you're punting on two Chelsea assets that just got knocked down by West Ham. I think there are probably better places to go.
I mean, I'm just looking at their fixture difficulties for the next few weeks coming forward. 2.8, 0.8, 2, 1.8, 1.8, 3.3. Their fixture difficulties are actually very good for Chelsea attack going forwards. Very positive. So they've got some very good matchups coming up. So that's something to consider. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about that. Yeah. We're talking about the future tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
we can do that anyway. All right, guys. So, all right. The last one of this week, 46 minutes in. If you haven't, the 70 people watching. If you haven't hit like and subscribe, guys, please do. We did say we weren't going to ask, but really, we also would love your votes for the Football Content Awards.
And thank you for being here. 70 people
is amazing. Thank you for being here as well. Yes, that's the main thing. That's the main thing. Thanks for sharing, coming in and listening to me lamenting my disgraceful game week, and Gabe and Lucy and trying to stop me from committing Harry Carey. But anyway, here we go, guys. You've waited 46 minutes for this. I don't think a set of circumstances have ever hit me so hard in an FPL game week as what happened last night. Right, first things first. Once again, the Gabriel and Saliba came back to haunt all those people who missed that team league and missed out on and stuck with Gabriel and ended up with Saliba. How many points have we lost from that alone? I don't want to think about it. Then I had Chucky on the bench. And guess what happened? Gabriel came off the bench because of Tomiyasu getting sent off, and the referee shouldn't even have sent him off. He booked the wrong blooming player for wasting time as well. He only 8 seconds against 15 seconds for the other player. So there, you booked the wrong one to start with. And then, who did he take off? He took off Martinelli, my other player. So, right. And then just to top it off, I thought, well, at least I've got a penalty. Saka didn't take it. The wife came down. What the hell are you doing? I was howling with laughter by the end of it. I couldn't do anything else. I could have smashed the TV, but actually I was just laughing. It was awful. Enough of my woes. It was terrible. this game, right? Let's look what it said. Arsenal 1.76, Crystal Palace 0.98. It didn't really like Crystal Palace. I liked Crystal Palace. I thought Crystal Palace might get something. To be fair, watching the game, they very nearly did. Fixed it, they actually really like Crystal Palace, but that's not surprising because it's got an evil laugh and it hates Arsenal away anyway. And in fact, all the matchups also hated Arsenal. They look okay, I think I would say, Gabe. I don't think they were amazing, but I think Crystal Palace is a tough place to go. Lucien, your perspective, please. Saka owners, are we selling? And more to the point, what on earth do we do if we want to replace someone like Gabriel? Because I think there's quite a few of us wanting to do that right now.
Well, I'm not going to comment on the Gabriel situation. I'm going to let the Arsenal ITKs do that. I'm going to start with the slides.
Come on!
Love it. Not taking the bait. Man recognizes bait.
I'm just saying, I own the left back in game week 38 that got me a clean sheet and a goal, and I'm pretty sure he'll come on. So anyway, first thing that the slide says is Talisman Eze. Well, he did take a lot of shots. but he was certainly not the talisman. You've got to respect the Jordan. No, not Jordan Ayew. It's actually Orson Edouard that made the difference for
Jordan Ayew. Jordan Ayew. Are you serious?
No, I mean,
that man is the equivalent of a wheelie bin on legs.
Yeah,
it's the worst player I've ever seen. Maybe Carlton Palmer was worse.
Definitely Orson Edouard. Yeah. Yeah, thank goodness. Yeah, but that was all Palace could muster, really. I think more important is that Arsenal, right? Thomas Partey at right back made a lot more of a difference compared to whoever that plays at left back, because that Partey to Saka connection is still very, very real. Everything connected so well on the right side that even Eddie Nketiah himself, usually on the left, drifted all the way to the right side. So if you own Martinelli and Kai Havertz, well, like me, I definitely have already sold Kai Havertz. I don't know what to do with the money, but yeah, everything is down that right side. I think Bukayo Saka owners can definitely hold. But that whole thing written about Kai Havertz and Martinelli's penetrating runs, yeah, I wouldn't even hold them against Fulham up next, I think. Yeah, but everything goes down that right side now. So Bukayo Saka could probably luck in another assist or another goal in the near future. But for now, everything is on that right side. Everything is on that right side.
Gabe, a question, please. Saka at 8.5 million. You mentioned it earlier on. Odegaard's also 8.5 million. Now, apparently, it took Arteta by surprise, this penalty, because he didn't know. They took a decision out on the pitch to do it, by all accounts. Now, that says to me that Saka didn't want it. So has his head gone on penalties? Is that the reason? But I was just wondering, has his head gone here? And if that's the case, then he may not get them back now. And therefore, probably Odegaard over Saka all of a sudden. What do you think?
I mean, if that was an on-the-pitch decision, then I would suggest that Arteta's head is gone. Because if in his mind, Saka was going to take the next penalty, the guy fucking lost it.
Well, the point is that has he, you know, penalties are a mental thing, aren't they? At the end of the day, it's a mental thing.
Saka's not a good pen taker, and he shouldn't be taking them, and he himself knows that. I don't know. This is something that I predicted from the beginning of the season. It was a bit of a guess, but I thought, and the reason I started with Havertz is I thought Havertz would take them because he's only missed one ever in his professional career. Havertz has so I thought it would be him after Jorginho. Would have been a different game week if I was right on that, but I don't. Yeah, I don't. Saka does not get the pens back. He doesn't want them. He knows he's not good at them. He's a smart kid. Smarter than Arteta.
It's just really just absolutely destroyed me. It really did. Just when you think I know he's quite highly owned, but, you know, just when you think you're finally going to get some points, and then just wipe me out. In the quest for a cheap striker, Lucien, is Edouard an option at five? They've got some very good fixtures coming up. Very good fixtures.
If you like one pointers once in a while, sure. I mean, it's hard.
Well, he's at 5.5, so yeah, why not? You know, I mean, he's 5.5 million. You know, he's not going to score every week, right? They don't.
He's an easy replacement. I mean, yeah, if you want to replace Joao Pedro without a budget, right? Yeah, that's an easy one. But I mean, it's hard to look past Haaland, Wiesa, and Julian Alvarez. It really is really, really difficult to look past those three right now.
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. The reason I was looking at the 5.5 in Edouard is probably less of a benching headache. I don't know. You know, almost you look for a player who, you know, maybe invest the money elsewhere rather than having all these 6 and 7 million players who you then sat there going, right, heads, tails, you know, trying to find any reason, you know, this is going to be the problem. I'm going to make a call about this, guys. This is something I think which is going to be a general question about FPL this season. I think this season is the season of benching headaches. We've got too much money. Even now, I'm looking at a wild card, and I've not pulled it yet, but I'm looking at it, and I may not pull it, but I'm not struggling to get the players in I want. It's not difficult, not even with the budget I've got now. You're going to end up with all sorts. You're going to end up with, you know, You're going to end up with a mismatch of talent all over. You know, multiple players to bring in. We've got too much money right now, even now. Interesting, really, isn't it? That's the review, boys. 54 minutes. Fantastic stuff, as always. We try to make sure this lasts only an hour, don't we? So what I'll do is I'll just bring a few other bits and bobs in. We'll take questions tomorrow, Gabe, as usual. We won't take them today. Yeah. Just to remind the people who are here, if you want to join our mini league, it's still open, HUP69D. If you want to join us as haulers, so become members, there's also a prize mini league for the Patreons, for the haulers as well via the Discord, but you've got to get into the Discord to get the code. We'd love to see you in there, of course, and it's getting quite interesting in there. There's quite a lot of debate going on right now, and again, a lot more voice channels going on. Pre-deadline voice chat, second week on the trot. Very pleasant it was. Nima and I were in there. Gabe was down in LA. Yeah, it's all right for some, mate. Thank you to the haulers, of course. Let me quickly rattle through them. Super haulers, Thingamabob, David Harrison, FPL, Nima, Zach, Harborboy, Daddy Bot, Greenback Golf, FPL, Robbie, Dread, and then haulers. Dread, longest running, poor Dread, had a shocking game week, like me. FPL, Craig, Pardner, Kevin Rose, Connor Hunt, Donny FPL, Oscar Arias, FPL Teacher, thank you, my friend. Blonde, S. Scott as M, William, Tom Gorsuch, Thavinder Raj, Lindsay O, FPL DG Boy, Akshay, Dom, Claire FPL, Catherine A, Sal the Samurai, Harry Not Kane, Real, Sebastian Koo, Benjamin Lockwood, FPL, some rubber ducky, quack, quack, Niels Apples, Nick Khan, Big Mike, FPL Discomfort, FPL Discomfort, I still love that. General Zod, what's that one? What's that? Oh, Gladys Street Preachers again. I always get that one. I struggle to read that one. Jack M, FPL Planner, FPL Bondos, Jamie Baker, and Brett M. And Patreons, Elron, Lucien again. You're a star, Lucien. FPL California. You just want extra shout outs, don't you? Is that it? How fast was that, right? Straight through it. Rattled nice. Through it. And last thing, and again, if you liked what you've seen, come back. First priority, come back. If you really like what you saw, and if you're a regular, please do vote for us, because Nima wants to go and, again, do his John Terry impression and celebrate everybody else's success at the Football Content Awards. Nima's is our resident social... What's the word, Gabe? Social what?
Social director.
Yeah. Does he just direct? Yeah, I was trying to think of something rather rude, but maybe I shouldn't say
it. He's the director of the masses.
Yes, yes. probably turn up his allergy outfit. But yes, Nima will be there again, hopefully, if we get a nomination to celebrate everybody else's success, because we are little old net that hall. That's all we are. But we always bat above, punch above our weight, don't we, Gabe? That's the thing.
We do. We float.
We do. We do. We do. So, without further ado, gentlemen, what's going on in the chat? Social media Muppet. Actually, that's actually quite kind. That was going to be much worse than that. I just couldn't think of anything.
No.
But yes, I need to go to the airport now. So, Gabe, thank you very much. I hopefully will see you tomorrow from Tallinn, Estonia, where I will be. Thank you, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, Lucien.
I'm more than happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, how could we possibly not have you? You've got so much to offer. Thank you again. And we'll see you all tomorrow. And I hope to. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Peace.